The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB, Freeport, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue here, taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night, the 12th day of November. Our engineer, Brian Graves, is across the way. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. As always, up first, we'll talk to the legendary baseball Hall of Famer, Ferguson Jenkins, about his great career, about the 1969 Chicago Cubs ball club, and about some of his upcoming projects. In the second half, we'll welcome in former New York Islander and Ranger defenseman Rich Pilon. So sit back and relax. Enjoy Sports Talk 1240 tonight on WGBB. We've got some great stuff ahead for you in the next couple of hours. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page titled Sports Talk 1240. There you'll find sports information, show information, and more. So you can stop by, give us a look, then click and give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter at SportsTalk1240. And all past shows can be heard on our website at www.sportstalk1240.com. Well, my first guest was a pitcher for the Philadelphia Phillies, the Cubs, the Rangers, and the Boston Red Sox from 1965 through 1983. Three-time All-Star, winner of 284 games, striking out 3,192 batters along the way. He won the National League Cy Young Award in 1971. And, of course, he was elected to the National Baseball Hall of Fame up in Cooperstown, New York in 1991. I'd like to welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Fergie Jenkins. Fergie, good evening.
Hey, Bill. How you doing?
Great. Great to have you with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Now, I want to go back to a little bit about your roots, Fergie. Your mom was a descendant of slaves who escaped through the Underground Railroad before settling up in Ontario, correct?
Correct. Her family came through the Underground Railroad into Canada around the 1800s.
Outstanding. Okay, now, and when you were younger, you honed your pitching skills by throwing pieces of coal from the local coal yard, right?
Right, yeah. I was born in the east end of town, and there was a Chesapeake and Ohio spur railroad line, and they hauled a lot of coal, different products on the railroad cars, and a lot of times they had open box cars, and it was kind of a contest for young guys back then to try to hone their skill in trying to hit the open box car as it traveled, and I was kind of a guy that was able to do it on a regular basis.
And that helped you along the way, certainly. Now, I also read that you played for the Globetrotters in 67 to 69. Tell us a little bit about your days with the Harlem Globetrotters.
Well, I got an opportunity to travel with the Globetrotters with Meadowlark, Curly, Jackie Jackson, Leon Hilliard, a bunch of different guys, Showboat Hall. Through the Globetrotters, they wanted a pitcher to give up the home run each night to Meadowlark Lemon. And I played the third quarter of about 170, 175 games with them over the course of three seasons. Kept me in pretty good shape. Did a lot of running. Played the third quarter 15 minutes and really enjoyed what I was doing. And the ball club didn't see that I was in danger of hurting myself or whatever. So I had an opportunity to travel with them and really enjoy myself. Had a lot of fun during the winter months.
Imagine a club today letting one of their pitchers play for the Harlem Globetrotters, Fergie.
I don't think that would happen.
No.
You know, I just tried to explain to them, I'm not going to be the star of the show. Meadowlark, Showboat Hall, all these different athletes are doing that. And I was in a couple of skits, the out-of-bounds, the referee, the figure eight, and I did basically the baseball skit, pitching to Meadowlark and giving up the home run each night.
Yeah. The great Meadowlark Lemon. We've had him on the broadcast. Greatly missed. What an ambassador for the game. Fergie Jenkins with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. You're due to begin working on a new project, Fergie, that I've heard about. Should be very highly anticipated. Stories of the great 1969 Chicago Cubs ball club. And it should be of interest to folks around here, Met fans, due to the way those two teams battled it out for the NL East title that legendary season. Now, the author is George Castle, correct?
Correct, yes. We're going to coincide ideas that we had, and I've got different clippings of different stories that I have, and we're going to put something together and just let the people of Chicago know what that 69 team was all about.
Fine. And, again, published by Signature Strength under the leadership of Mr. John Schenck. The artwork and illustrations to be done by John Hanley, and it's going to be debuted at the Cubs convention in January of 19.
Yes, it is. Yeah, we're hoping to do it for the 50th anniversary. And all those gentlemen you mentioned are really going to be surprised, and I think they're going to be happy with the product, because what George Castle and I are trying to put together is get people an insight on spring training, the start of the season, going through the Black Cat incident.
Oh, yeah.
So many things that happened in that particular year. Having so many good ball players, clutch hitters like Jim Hickman, Billy Williams, Ernie Banks, the Black Cat incident with Ron Santo. It's going to be interesting that people are going to get an insight of what that season was all about.
That sounds great. I'm looking forward to seeing that myself. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the stories that we may end up coming out with for the book. How did the Cubs feel about the Mets initially compared to the final feelings later on that season?
Well, that was really a competition. After the Mets really came on in September, if we were going to try to win that division, we had to beat them because they were really hot. I'm not sure. They won like 18 to 22 games. Our season wasn't good as that in September. And unfortunately, we did lose to them. And winning 92 ball games was, nowadays in that division, if you win 92 games, you win the pennant.
Right.
I think the Mets won 97 or 98, so they had a great season. So I just think that the camaraderie we had in our team and with the Mets, you know, Tom Seaver, so many guys, Cleon Jones, Swoboda, they had a great ball club. So I just think that when the competition really got good, when we played head-and-head, it was a good series.
Now, the feeling on the Cubs, though, was that you should win.
Well, we stayed in first place for almost 5 months. Mm-hmm. And as I said, the Mets got hot. Crane Pool, Cleon Jones, so many guys on that ball club that were really, really good competition for us. And unfortunately, we just didn't win out.
You had a great Hall of Fame skipper on the club, Leo DeRocher, who by that time probably had seen his better days. But give us a little insight into Leo and the Cubs, Fergie.
Well, that last month, we had a lot of meetings. Player meetings, coaches meetings, manager meetings. But, you know, Leo was a fiery individual. We tried to put our best foot forward. I pitched quite a few ball games in that last month, along with Kenny Holzman and Bill Hands. It was just one of those things that, you know, when you look back, did we do all the right things? I think we did.
Mm-hmm.
We got lots of hits. We just didn't score a lot of runs. We were averaging like almost 5 runs a game throughout the season, and in that last month we were averaging like 2 or 3 or maybe less than that. And this is the reason why I think we got caught by the Mets and unfortunately didn't win that division.
Exactly. Now, you had a great catcher on the ball club, Randy Hundley, and he was involved in a couple of great plays that are memorable during that season. The play, I believe it was Tommy Agee.
Tommy Agee sliding in at
right.
The plate. The umpire called him safe. We didn't have replay back then.
No.
Randy was really emphatic that he was out at the plate, and unfortunately he wasn't. And Bill Hands was a pitcher in that contest, I think against Kuzman. And I think we lost that game 2-1 or 3-2.
Yeah, I remember seeing replays of an interview with the late, great Tommy Agee Fergie, and he says, Randy doesn't hit me, but of course he thinks he did, you know? So it's one of those things that'll go down in history as we'll probably never know what happened.
Yeah, definitely. With replay, we'd have probably found out later. But, you know, the Mets had a great pitching staff with McAndrews, Gentry, Kuzman, Seaver. I think Nolan Ryan was in the bullpen. You had Ron Taylor was in the bullpen. There was some good pitching back then. So when you look at ball clubs, they really had the right players in the right spots.
And that was probably a tribute to Gil Hodges, too.
Oh, definitely. I think Gil Hodges knew what was going on. They had Rube Walker, I think it was a pitching coach.
Right,
too. So I just think that the Cubs didn't get outplayed. We just didn't score runs the way we were doing it for the early part of the season. And the Mets played really good that last month.
They sure did. We got Fergie Jenkins with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Now, we'll talk about the late, great Ernie Banks. I've had him on the program before. He came on, started singing As Time Goes By for me in the imitable style of only Ernie Banks can do. Now, talk to us a little bit about what it was like having Ernie on that ball club.
Well, I roomed with Ernie the last 3 years, 67, 8, and 9, before he came a coach. Never talked about himself. Always talked about the ball club or players that we have on the team, about the city, about the representative of playing for Mr. Wrigley and the Chicago Cubs. I just think that, unfortunately, we didn't win for him.
Right.
You know, we didn't win for Ronnie or Billy or myself or, you know, the ball club. We got close twice, 69 and also 70. Ernie was just a go-go-getter, an emphatic individual. He always had a saying about what the Cubs were going to do. The Cubs will go to heaven in 67. The Cubs will win in 69.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. He always came up with a phrase that I just think that what an ambassador to the ball club and to Major League Baseball, and he's really, really missed.
He certainly is, definitely. The whole infield, Fergie, was really an infield of all-stars. Glenn Beckert at second base and Don Kessinger at shortstop. And they'd give you a hit once in a while, too.
Oh, yeah, they turned great double plays.
Yeah.
Kessinger, near the end of that season, was the leadoff. Beckert was second, Billy Williams third, and Ronnie hit cleanup and then Ernie. I mean, we had a ball club that knew how to play the game, fundamentally. And that's what every pitcher, when he takes the mound, wants to know these guys behind you know what they're doing, they know how to play, and fundamentally they're ready to play.
Right. And, of course, we remember in 1969 the Hall of Famer, the late Ron Santo. After every Cub win at Wrigley Field, what would he do, Fergie?
He'd click his heels.
Right, yeah.
There was an incident happened right after the All-Star game, and Ronnie... we won a late ball game, like one of those runs in the ninth, and he was pretty happy jumping around. And Leo, after the game, said, Ronnie, every time we win a ball game, I want you to run down the left field line because our dressing room was down the left field corner. It was to click your heels once or twice. And Ronnie started doing that, and it became kind of the footnote for Ronnie. Every time we won, he would run down the line and click his heels. And I think some teams maybe took offense to it, but it was just something that Leo wanted Ronnie to do, and Ronnie didn't mind doing it.
Just a classic gesture that has gone down in the lore of baseball is one of those things. And, of course, we had the bleacher bums in Wrigley Field, a rabid bunch of fans out in the outfield, right?
Yeah, they showed up with yellow work helmets.
Right.
And Dick Selma would get him going.
Dick Selma.
The guy he was in the bullpen. You know, he was a starter from time to time, but he'd go down the bullpen and he'd wave a towel about the fifth or sixth inning and get the bleacher bums riled up and we were scoring runs. And they were really young individuals, really good fans. They would travel to Atlanta, St. Louis, Cincinnati, or New York. and just would follow us. And really, fans that really understood the game and really wanted the Cubs to win.
Yeah. Certainly a great bunch of folks, definitely. And in the outfield, you had another Hall of Famer. Certainly, I felt one of the underrated ball players of his time, Billy Williams.
Yes, Billy was really underrated. I mean, when you look at outfielders that drove in runs, good defensively, hit home runs, and was a great base runner. He did it all. I mean, Billy... he had the nickname of Sweet Swing in Billy Williams, and he did have a great swing. And he was second to MVP, I think, behind Johnny Bench one season. Hit 300 quite a few years and went in the Hall of Fame.
He sure did. And in center field, I believe Leo employed a platoon of Don Young and Jimmy Qualls. Is that right, Fergie?
I think it was Adolfo Phillips.
Adolfo Phillips, okay,
Adolfo
right.
Adolfo Phillips. I mean, he came over with me from Philadelphia in the trade. In 66. Later on in the season, we had Don Young playing, and I think they both were really good outfielders. Batting average, so-so, but drove in some runs, but really played a solid outfield.
Yeah, and of course, you know what we remember Jimmy Qualls for here in New York, right?
Yeah, he got that hit off Tom Seaver. Tom, I don't. The Mets at one time didn't have anybody that pitched a no-hitter, and Tommy's really... doing his thing out there, and Jimmy Qualls, I think he got it like the seventh or eighth inning, something like that.
Yeah, it was, I believe, 8 2/3, something like that.
8 2, oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay. Tommy got
he was into
close.
The eighth inning, yeah. The imperfect game, we call it around here.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah, and of course in right field you said Jim Hickman, another underrated ball player.
Right, we got Jimmy in a trade, and when he came over to the ball club, you know, he hit, and then all of a sudden he caught fire. He became one of the number one clutch hitters on that ball club. If you had somebody who could drive in a run late with a runner on second or a runner on third, he'd get that sacrifice fly or the base hit. Hickman was the guy that really drove in, I think that year he might have had like 90 RBIs.
Yeah, another undersung hero for the Cubs ball club. Then he had a good bench with guys like Willie Smith.
Yeah, we had Willie, we had Nate Oliver, Gene Oliver, Popovich. We had some players that, you know, Leo really depended on the starting lineup. I think if he'd have maybe played some of the extra men maybe a few more times, you know, it could have been a different outcome. But Leo wanted to play a certain lineup, and he played it, and he was hoping that that was going to be the lineup that would win that division. But we had some good bench players, guys that knew how to play the game. And just waiting in the wings for their time to play.
Yeah, and the pitching staff, of course, anchored by yourself, Kenny Holtzman, and a guy who he lived out here on Long Island, owned
yeah,
a gas station, Bill Hans. Yeah,
and at 59, I think he won 20 games that year.
Yeah, I think he might have. And
had good stuff. Had a good slider, good fastball, good control. Dick Selmo was always on that staff. Phil Reagan,
the Vulture.
We had some characters, believe me.
Yeah, Fergie Jenkins talking with us tonight. We're lucky to have him on Sports Talk 1240. We spoke a little bit about Seaver's imperfect game, and you mentioned the Black Cat at Shea Stadium. Describe what happened for the folks who weren't around then, Fergie, what happened with the Black Cat incident.
Well, I'm not sure who turned it loose. But, you know, right behind the plate is where all the ground crew would enter when they scraped the diamond in the sixth inning, and they would go back through the double doors behind the plate. The sixth inning starts, Billy's the hitter, and Ronnie's in the on-deck circle, and somebody throws this little kitten, because it wasn't a mature cat. It was really small.
Okay.
It walked right in front of our dugout, and Ronnie's in the on-deck circle, and Ronnie kind of looked behind him, and here's this cat walking behind him. It walked right in front of our dugout and walked into the stands, and that was it.
Yeah.
I think people thought that was a kind of a turning a point for us and the Mets. I don't think they thought it was a curse or anything
an
like
omen.
That.
An omen, yeah.
It was just something that happened. It was an incident. The game kind of stopped.
Yeah.
When this cat just walked across in front of the
dugout. Sure. There's that famous photo, like you said, of Ron Santo standing in the on-deck circle, just looking at the cat, and the cat seems to be looking in your dugout.
Right.
And, it's just...
I think some of the guys were whistling at it, maybe, waving at it. But it just walked just calmly and then walked into the stands.
And that was it, yeah.
Yeah.
One of those magical moments of 69.
Yeah, it was. I mean, yeah. And people probably remember that. A lot of the players do, I know.
Yeah. Now, there was another incident that I'll talk about, Fergie, involving Billy Hands. He knocked down Tommy Agee, and then Kuzmin comes back, sends a message back to the Cubbies by plunking Ron Santo.
Yeah, oh, that's, I think that a pitcher has to protect your players on your team. And in that situation, in our era, in the 60s and 70s, this was not a rare incident. It happened all the time. You got the respect of your player by knowing that if one of your players got brushed back or knocked off the plate or plunked, it was your job to go out there and do this and reciprocate, as you call
right.
it. Plunk one of their players. Or you wait for the starting pitcher, because the National League, the pitcher's got to come to the plate.
Sure do, yeah.
So in that incident, I don't think nobody was hurt. We didn't fight. Nothing happened. So it was just a reciprocal situation that when you see things like that happen.
Again, one of those moments that makes the highlight reels.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely. Not if it had been a rabbit, somebody headhunting, hit somebody like that, and it was a fight for 20 minutes, sure, you'd remember something like that. But it was just he got plunked. 2 innings later, somebody else got plunked.
That's it. Yeah. And then move on. Exactly.
Right.
We'll talk a little bit now, Fergie, about some of the projects that you have coming up. I know Steve wanted me to mention a couple of things. There's a great new book by the noted children's author Marla McKenna called Mom's Big Catch. And that book has been endorsed by Fergie and his foundation, as well as the Chicago Cubs. And you could learn more about Mom's Big Catch and Marla McKenna herself, the great writer, at her website, marlamckenna.com. And folks should really check that out. And there's another new book, Fergie, that I learned about coming from John Shank's Signature Strength Publishers called Champions, 15 Inspiring Comeback Stories from Sports and Life. Now, you're on the cover. George Castle has some writing in there, too, as well as John Shank. The foreword is by the former Buffalo Bills coach, Marv Levy. And as I said, you're pictured on the cover, and that's coming out, I believe, February 22nd of next year.
Yes, it is. Yeah, with the writing of some of these books, I think we're giving people an insight on athletes that, maybe have a little rough time in their life.
Yeah.
And they have a way of coming back, especially in sports. It could be an Olympic athlete or a professional athlete in different sports, or even a coach that has that opportunity to write about what happened in his life. And in my situation, I've had a few ups and downs with some deaths in the family. And I won the Comeback Player of the Year after having an off year with the Chicago Cubs and then moving on to the Rangers and winning 25 ball games. But this was just something that the writers or some of the people wanted to hear about, and we put it in a novel. And I think it's going to be a good book for people to read.
We will look forward to seeing that. Now, also, Fergie has a 3-day signing appearance coming up to benefit his great Fergie Jenkins Foundation. He'll be signing from 10 to 3 p.m. on December 15th, 16th, and 17th at the Yorktown Mall in Lombard, Illinois. Appearing with Fergie will be, of course, Team Fergie member, the great children's author Marla McKenna. And you could get Marla's book, folks, Mom's Big Catch, for $40, and that includes Fergie signing it, so that's a pretty good deal.
Definitely, and we've got two other players making an appearance. We will have Lee Smith,
who
pitched with the Cubs, and several other ball clubs, St. Louis Cardinals, Angels,
right.
Had well over 470 saves, and the great Andre Dawson.
The Hawk.
Who was the MVP in 87.
So yes.
There's going to be an opportunity for people that really are sports fans to come in, maybe get a ball signed, a photograph, 8x10, something around the Christmas season that you might want to give to a friend or someone you know in the family. But there'll be three of us making an appearance along with Marla, as you said.
That's outstanding, Fergie. What a day that'll be.
It should be a lot of fun.
I mean,
we've done it a few times there at Mike's Sporting Goods. He's got a memorabilia shop that we do a lot of signing at the mall, Yorktown Mall. So it should be very interesting.
And you'll also be at the Cubs convention in January on the 12th, 13th, and 14th.
That's an annual thing.
Right.
The Cubs put on that convention, and it's at the Sheraton Hotel on Water Street. And ex-Cubs, the Cubs that are playing today are all going to be there. So that's always a great day. Well, it's going to be 3 days, Friday, Saturday,
right,
and Sunday.
Exactly. And folks can keep in touch with Fergie on Facebook. His Facebook page is titled Fergie Jenkins Cubs. And Fergie's also on Twitter at 31 Fergie Jenkins. And also, any questions on appearances, etc., you could direct them to Fergie's personal assistant, the great Steve Gassman, who I've been dealing with. What a pleasure it is to work with Steve. And his email is fergie.inquiries@gmail.com. That's fergie.inquiries@gmail.com. And you should also check out, folks, the Fergie Jenkins Foundation homepage at fergiejenkinsfoundation.org. And Fergie, I tell you, it's been an honor and a pleasure speaking with you tonight. I thank you for taking part out of your Sunday night to be with us.
Hi, Bill. It's always a pleasure to talk about the best game in the world, baseball. And I had an opportunity to play 21 seasons and really enjoyed it.
Outstanding. Well, we'll talk to you again when the new book comes out, hopefully, Fergie. And
all right.
We'll see you up in Cooperstown next summer.
Sounds good. Thanks, Bill.
Take care, Fergie. Ferguson Jenkins, folks. Next up, we'll talk to former Islanders defenseman Rich Pilon. So stick around, folks.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB, Freeport, New York. We got some reports that there's no audio on the webcam, and we apologize for that. We're working towards getting that cleared up. This is Bill Donahue with you on Sports Talk 1240, taking you through this Sunday evening, the 12th day of November. I hope you enjoyed that great interview with Fergie Jenkins. What a great Hall of Famer. What a Hall of Fame person he is as well. The football today, unbelievable. The Jets, typical Jets, fizzled down at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa against the Buccaneers, a game that going in that they should have won. But no good. No good. And, of course, the Giants just further falling into oblivion with a loss to the previously winless 49ers. And, of course, you take a look at the Knicks with Kristaps Porzingis making the Knicks an exciting ticket all over again at the Garden. Hockey, the Rangers, they're like butter. They're on a roll. And the Islanders kind of inconsistent at this point. We're still waiting to get Rich Pilon on the line. Until then, we'll talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame and the balloting that's coming up in, I believe it's the 10th day of December, when the Modern Era Committee meets to vote on players such as Don Mattingly, Ted Simmons, Steve Garvey, Dale Murphy, and, of course, on the Players Union rep, Marvin Miller, who hopefully should get in this time. He's well overdue. So we'll revisit that at a later time, folks. But right now, my next guest, former defenseman during his 15-year NHL career with the Islanders, the Rangers, and the St. Louis Blues, but he's primarily recognized around here for his time with the Islanders. I'd like to welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Rich Pilon. Rich, good evening.
Hey, good evening. How you doing up there? How's the weather in New York, New York?
Believe it or not, you're going to laugh, but we're freezing. It's 40 degrees, and, you know, we can't take it.
Yeah. Well, we got some snow here now. It's finally, usually right around Halloween here, she gets a little chilly. And So now we got our snow. So we're getting ready to hunker down.
Ready to hunker down, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Now, you grew up in Saskatchewan. Who were your favorite teams and players as a youngster?
My first team was the Montreal Canadiens, and my favorite player was Guy Lafleur. Second favorite team was always the New York Islanders. Those were my two teams growing up.
And who'd you like on those Islander clubs?
On the Islanders was Brian Trottier, who was my favorite team, my idol. Those were my two idols, was Trottier and Lafleur growing up.
Not too shabby,
yeah,
Rich.
Yeah, pretty cool to get to play with them after. So, play against Guy, and then to also not only but be a teammate of Brian's and learn from him as a leader. So.
Can't beat that. Well, what was your first hockey memory, Rich?
You mean as an NHLer or as a pro?
Let's start as a youngster.
Well, I think, you know, I always look back at hockey, and what you remember most. I think probably the biggest thing is that growing up in a small town in Saskatchewan, we got the, you know, it is true. We spent all of our time out on the outdoor rink, and I was always skating, and that's what I spent most of my time doing, was basically playing on the outdoor rink. And, you know, my father coached me right up till I was 12 years old, and he never put any skates on. He always came out in cowboy boots.
Uh-huh.
So he'd be passing pucks. He wasn't a skater, and we didn't have any coaches in our small town, so... But, you know, I had a bit of a gift that I skated so much, and they gave me an opportunity to get to the rink and to the pond. And then I did take some power skating when I was younger. And then from there, it kind of evolved. You know, I was very, very little until I was 15. And I didn't grow till I started growing when I was 60.
Okay.
So at age 15, I know how development, I can tell you a little bit more that, you know, you have these leagues now where, you know, and I know they've got more than in the U.S. Like, they got the Long Island Junior Islanders now in Long Island, and
right.
Back here, we have kind of the same tiering. Well, I was never playing with the best players. I was always playing like house league, if you understand that. So I wasn't playing. I was usually the better player, but I was playing in a very poor league, right? So, of course, I was going to shine because I could skate. So when I left at 15, I was playing because I had nowhere to play. My dad had actually pulled me off a team. So this is the memory that stands out the most. He came in, he grabbed the coach, he shook the coach around and said, "My son's not playing for you anymore."
Oh.
After the first period.
Yeah.
Got undressed, went home, and for the rest of that season, I played old-timer hockey with 35-plus.
Wow.
Yeah, and then at 16 years old, I got an opportunity for a tryout. I was always a forward. I played defense because of being from a small town, you had to play every position. And then I barely made this team, which would be the best midget, like for the 15, 16, 17-year-old league in Saskatchewan where I'm from. In that league, I barely made that team to be on. And I was trying to afford us to get cut. The defenseman got hurt, and I ended up going back to the back end and kind of rest is history. And then, you know, 4 years later, I'm playing in the NHL.
Right. You were drafted in the seventh round, 143rd overall in the 86 NHL entry draft, of course, taken by the Islanders. Now, that must have been a thrill, Rich, being an Islander fan as a youngster to get drafted by the club.
Oh, it was unbelievable. It's a dream come true, right?
Yeah.
Especially when everybody around you is telling you you're not going to be making it. And I end up, you know, being drafted out of the midget league, not out of our junior league. I'm one of two players. The other guy's name is Brent Bobick. I'm the only one to ever play pro, but there's only two of us that have ever been drafted out of midget AAA.
Yeah, okay.
So I hadn't played a junior game yet, right? So I always took a chance, but it also was because I had history because my head coach, Rick Wilson, became the assistant coach on the island. And Terry Simpson, who was the head coach for the Islanders, he had seen enough of me and he considered me a late bloomer. And that's where they kind of took me later in the draft and, you know, kind of came out of nowhere after that. So, but unbelievable feeling to be able to get drafted by a team that you grew up watching. And then to be able to see Brian Trotsche and, you know, my first two training camps, I come to camp and nobody knew who I was. I was just happy to be there. I was crap in my pants. I was scared. I had never been on a plane till
wow.
My first trip to New York.
Yeah.
So it's unbelievable how much things can change for you.
Who was the first player during the early days that you met or encountered that really the reality struck in that, hey, I made it?
I think when you get the exhibition games and, you know, guys around me, like, you know, not guys that ended up going to the minors, but they're telling me that, you know, I didn't really believe it, but they were telling me that you're getting a chance because I was getting pulled up. I played, I think, 9 out of the 10 exhibition games that year, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they were taking a good, strong look at me. And then, you know, there's myself and the first round pick by the name of Dean Chanel. Him and I were going to be the two extra guys. Well, one of us was getting cut, but then Kenny Leiter ended up quitting. And then they were keeping both of us for a while. So they were going to take the better of us as we got going, right? So, you know, things happen. You get opportunities in life, and you got to make the best of them. That's kind of what happened there. And then, you know, Kenny Morrow was a guy that I, you know, looked to watch, Kenny Johansson, and now I'm playing with these guys with an unbelievable feeling.
Sure.
You know, so just being in that room, you know, the drop of the puck, and you visualize and you dream, and then when your dreams start coming true, you got to pitch yourself to understand if this really happened.
Yeah, I bet. Now, let's take a look at some of the guys that you did meet on the way through the Islanders, and we'll get your opinion on Pat LaFontaine.
Yeah, Patty. Patty, an unbelievable man, great person. You know, he was one of those guys, Patty, you would think the way he was such a good hockey player, but he was, one thing I always noticed about Patty, he was such a pleaser.
Yeah.
Very humble, sincere, and I knew when we were losing, he just took that whole team on his shoulders, and he didn't have to wear that whole team on his shoulders. That's why they call it a hockey team. There's 20 guys in that room that got to take ownership, but Patty took the whole brunt of that. He really tried to take all. That's one thing I always, because he'd always look sad, right, to me?
Yeah.
And he was trying so hard, he just couldn't get it done, because Patty wasn't a big guy, right?
No.
So that's but one thing for him. When he showed up at the rink, he gave you everything he had, and you knew that he wasn't coming there and never going to be going through the motions. So he's always a player or teammate that you want to have on your team.
How about a guy who was considered a sniper, Pierre Turgeon?
Turge, another very good guy. I used to call him Monas, my friend, all the time in French. He was another very quiet. Both guys, these guys were quiet leaders in the room. And they were the hardest workers, and that's what you want from your leaders that are quiet. And Terry was another one. He showed up every day. You knew what you're getting from him, and he also had that. You know, there's so much pressure being the best player on the team. John Tavares is going through it. You know, all these top end guys, they just shoulder the whole weight and take the whole weight of the world. And you know, a Messier does it. Gretzky does it, and that's why this is why these best players on every team, they're trying to fill those shoes, right?
Right.
So when things aren't going their way, they don't win the game for the team and for the fans, they're the ones that get the blunt. It's, you know, the guys in the back, like myself, we're support cast to a lot of our teammates, and you know, you need us on the team, but these superstars, your best defensemen, your couple best forwards, your goalie, they take a beating in the media, and, you know, and they're usually, most of these guys are really good. Most of these players are great teammates, and they're good people.
Right.
Yeah.
Rich Pilon with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Another guy who was a prolific scorer was Zygmunt Palfy.
Yeah. Okay, Zygmunt's different.
Yeah.
Ziggy was a 2x4. But he had no muscle. He had nothing. I've never seen him the first time he showed up. I'm like, who's this kid, this little runt? I'm like, but man, could he skate it? Could he score?
Yeah.
But, you know, Ziggy was, I called him the unmade bed. Because he kind of looked always kind of shaggy, and his hair was crappy, and, you know, he showed up. He was, but a very nice guy, right?
Yeah.
You know, most of the guys you play with are pretty guys. There's not too many guys you play with that you sit there and go, I don't want this guy on the team, right? But Ziggy was a preferred, you know, he had the scoring ability. He had the touch around the net, and, you know, he was never in the best shape, but he always got the job done, and he scored goals for the team, so.
Yeah, can't beat it.
Yeah. Yep.
Here's a guy that we may come up with some disparaging remarks about. I know the fans probably would. Mike Milbury,
what can I say about – well, I have a lot of respect for Mike.
Okay.
Being that Mike always – Mike was a guy that you had to stand up to. So as a player, and you know, when he was coaching GM, if he bullied you and you let him bully you, he would bully you even more.
Oh boy!
So I always stood up to Mike, and Mike had a lot of respect for me, and he took care of me. He you know what, he kept me to be an Islander. He signed me for another 3-year deal. I didn't always respect things he did to other teammates, and I did call him on it when I had the chance. I stood up for my team. But he respected that also. He was a guy that you had to stand up and voice your opinion. It'd be like going to Sidney's office. This is like a little thing for Mike, but this is how Mike did. When you go into his office, he had a book of Hitler on his desk. Right?
Yeah.
And then he'd ask you to sit down, but then he's sitting in this big chair, and then you're sitting on this little stool almost. So I would never sit down.
Good. Yeah.
Because I'm like, you're not looking down on me. I'm just dead up here.
Right.
he used to drive him nuts.
Great story.
But Mike, Mike is a bike. Mike, you know, everybody knows Mike, and he did what he did. You never know what Mike was going to do.
Yeah.
Mike did what Mike did, and, you know, if you crossed him, he would for sure try and bury you. There's no question.
Yeah.
But, you know, as for Mike himself, I got along great with him. So, yeah,
good stories, Rich. Now, how about with the Rangers, a fellow blue liner, Brian Leetch?
Well, you know that whole when I got to the Rangers, I don't know if you got how much time I got here, but I got a call from Glenn Sather that summer when he took over the team.
Yeah,
and I got the call, and Sather calls me up, and I'd missed the call at home. I was in Saskatoon here in my home, and. All of a sudden, there's a call, and I *69 it. This lady picks up, and I'm like, hello? And she's like, you called my number? She's like, no. I'm like, yeah, you did. I said, I *69. She goes, who is it? I said, well, it's Rich Pilon. And she's like, oh, just hold on. And all I hear is Glenn.
Yeah.
So it's July 1st here in Canada, or July 2nd, actually. July 1st is our big holiday, right?
Right.
Well, I've been boozing up all night, and the whole way back to my hometown to Saskatoon, which is about 1:15, I'm debating whether I should work out. Okay?
Yeah.
So Glenn gets on the phone, and I'm trying to clear my voice, you know, and ask him to sit up straight now, and I'm asking my wife to get me a glass of water, and he gets on the phone, and this is what Glenn says to me. Rich Pilon? I said, yes, Glenn. He goes, well, we got a problem. I said, oh, yeah, what's that? He goes, well, you're fat and you're overpaid.
Oh, thank you.
So I sit there and I go, I kind of laugh. Like, I think he's joking.
Yeah.
And he goes, no, I'm not joking, actually, Rich. He goes, we got a big problem. He goes, I looked at your salary. Too much money for what you do, for what you bring into this team. So he goes, you got to show up to camp at 2:06. And if you don't show up to camp at 2:06, I'm sending you right to Hartford.
Wow.
My jaw is on the floor. So I sit there and I go, well, Glenn, I said, I haven't seen 206 since grade six. So we got a big problem.
Yeah.
So I turned into a bit of a prick. I said, listen, Glenn, I said, I know you got to pay me. I'll make sure I make my weight. I'll make sure I make training camp. But I said, if you really don't want me, why don't you just get rid of me? Like, I don't know what I did to you. I said, I show up every day. I put my work boots on. I may not be the best at what I do, but I know when I show up, you're getting everything. I'll give you everything I have for the team.
Right.
So at the end of our conversation, I negotiated 212. This is July 2nd, right? Do you have time to hear this story?
Sure,
go ahead. Yeah, it's a pretty good story, actually. So 212, I don't know if you ever heard the name Charles Poliquin, Gary Roberts.
No.
Anyway, these guys are workout gurus out of Colorado Springs. This guy, I hooked up with him, Brad McCrimmon. Long story short, he's the one that got Chris Pronger, Gary Roberts come back out of injuries, and he's the guy you want to hire. So I had hired him, been known him, he became a friend of mine over this for 5 years. And anyways, I weigh myself on July. I wasn't even upset that Glenn was going to be mad at me. I was more upset that I'd let down Charles. Because when he took me in as a client, I had to basically beg him, but I needed a referral from guys like Brad McCrimmon for him to take me.
Mm-hmm.
Because he looked at every guy he takes, he was very particular, that every guy he took was basically a walking commercial for him, right?
Okay.
So I weighed myself on July 3rd. It wasn't good. I was 244 pounds.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, what am I going to do? So I got to call Charles. So I call up Charles. He says, Rich, yeah. He goes, I thought you looked a little chunky. Because I never used to weigh me in, and then I just wouldn't weigh in, and I wouldn't even weigh myself. I'd just say, I'm 212, whatever, right? So anyways, Charles sent me some pills to Canada. By August 4th or 9th, I think it was, I was down to 200 pounds.
Wow.
Unbelievable. So I show up at the Ranger camp at 211, and my body fat's around 8%. Best shape I've ever been in my life. I haven't met Glenn Sader. I show up. I look good. I feel good. We have the big meeting the night before our training camp starts, and Dave Checkitz, he was the CEO at the time of MSG.
Uh-huh.
I think it's Checkitz, right? Checkitz, yeah. Anyway, he's up there, and he's going on and on about, because they've hired Glenn Sather. He's basically just, you know, telling how great he is, and, you know, we're all sitting there, and we all know he means business, right, Rich Pilon? In front of everybody.
Wow.
And I was pissed. I'm like, really, Glenn? Like, this is how we're going to start? So I show up. I get we got a package, whatever. Glenn comes up to me. He's like 5 feet tall.
Yeah.
And he comes up to me and he says, Rich, I said, Glenn, I'm like, holy F, I go, I thought you were bigger. I turn around and walk away. So this is our relationship. Like, this is my starter Rangers as a under, like, contract the next year. Because I had gotten to the Rangers the year before with Neil Smith, and I really liked Neil, right?
Yeah.
But when Glenn came in, he was going to do everything he could to make me quit. And it didn't work. Like, he put me in a different color jersey, and it was a nightmare, actually, my first 10 games. So now to Brian Leach. So my first 7 or 8 games, I usually play my 15 to 18 minutes, but that was my time on the ice, right?
Right.
Well, I get to the Rangers, I'm playing them 2 minutes, 4 minutes, and I'm like, really? They're not even going to give me a chance, right? So we're losing, which I'm like kind of like crossing my fingers. I hope we can keep losing, then hopefully the lineup will change and get some ice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I the first 9 games, I don't know how many pims I had, I would take a penalty, and then I would tell, because I got along really good with the refs in the league and the linesmen, right?
Yeah.
So those guys always took care of me, and I'd have a few beers with those guys every now and then. And so I would tell them, just give me a 10. I said, I do not want to sit on that side of the bench.
Yeah.
Just leave me sit on this side. I'll watch the game from the penalty box, right? So they'd give me a 10. And I would sit there. For my first 9 games, I had, I think, 4 or 5 10-minute misconducts. Because the refs were doing me a favor. I'm like, listen, it's Bill McCreary. I'd be like, Bill, just give me a 10. They're not playing me anyway. I'm able to watch from over here.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, one day, Ron Lowe comes up to me, and after about 10 games, he goes, we're going to try with Leachy tonight. I go, with Leachy? He goes, yeah, he goes, we're going to play tonight with him. I said, so I'm going to go playing from 4 minutes to what? He goes, well, you'll probably be up to what, you're 20, and I won't make it.
Yeah.
anyway, so Leachy and I started playing together, and, you know, I would basically his Bookaboom when he was with Bookaboom, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I basically got the puck, make sure he got it, make sure that I was cleaning up anything behind him, and him and I had a lot of chemistry. Brian's a super, super nice guy, and he was a guy that I rode his coattail. I just made sure I got him the puck, and I just would watch him go.
Yeah.
I was a fan.
Outstanding.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah, that was my rage. But, you know, when you start with the Rangers, I would not want to start with the Rangers.
No.
You know, back in the day, because they treated you so unbelievable. And I was always treated very well with the Islanders, but not to the level that the Rangers were treated, right? You know, they had their own plane, and it was just, they were well taken care of.
Yeah. Rich Pilon with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. How about the great Al Arbor, Rich? Another former defenseman. Always hear the guys have nothing but accolades for Al.
Well, Al made me who I am as a player today, or I was. When I got to the Islanders, Terry Simpson was there, and then Terry got fired. Al came in, so I went from playing quite a bit at the start as a rookie, did not play at all. So my first 2 weeks under Al was a nightmare. And, you know, I remember practices, and I was telling a story, I've told a story many times, where he would dump the puck in on breakouts, we'd do a 5-on-0 breakout, and he'd be yelling, "Rich Pilon, you're going to screw this up, make a bad pass, Pilon." And sure enough, I would make a bad pass, he'd blow his whistle, "Go again, Pilon can't pass."
Yeah.
It was just a nightmare. And then finally, you know, I told my assistant, who was my head coach in junior, Rick Wilson, I said, you know, Wilson, I go, "I don't know what's going on, but I don't know what I've done. I'm like, I think I'm going to get sent down. Like, what do I got to do?" And he goes, Rich, I don't know. He goes, "I'll talk to Al." So the next day, Al showed up at the rink, and I'm on the ice already, actually. He comes up to me, and he goes, "Well, you failed, kid." I said, "I failed?" He goes, "What did I fail?" He goes, "Well, you have no mental toughness. You're weak mentally. You don't know it, but you are." He goes, when I'm out on the ice, you don't hear me. The only person you should be listening for is your teammates. So me barking at you is just a way to see how much you're not here to please me. You're here to please your teammates."
Okay.
I'm like, "Okay, so what do I got to do?" He goes, "Do you want to play in this league for a long time?" I said, "I'll do whatever it takes." He goes, "Well, you're not an offensive defenseman. I know you had some good numbers in junior. You've got a good start to your year here, but you will not be an offensive defenseman in the NHL. He goes, "I see you as a shutdown guy, a bruiser, and a guy that everybody hates to play against." I said, "Al, tell me what I got to do." And he goes, "Well, you're going to go from the blue line in the offensive zone to our own end." I go, "If there's ever a 2-on-1 in the next 5 games where you are, it's not on you, I'm sending you to the minors."
Oh, boy.
He goes, "You're going to be a shutdown defenseman, and I'm going to have to teach me." He goes, "Well, here, it's going to start tomorrow at practice." He goes, "Darcy Regier is going to come out on the ice with you. Every day, you're going to go 20 minutes out. I want you 20 minutes out on the ice before anybody's out here. And I want you and Darcy to work on your first pass. That's all you're going to do." So basically, I would pivot, turn, get a puck, and hit Darcy Regier on the half wall, coming through the middle, longer pass, stretch passes. That's all I did for a whole year.
Wow.
Yeah, unbelievable. So Radar was, I have utmost respect for Al. He was a phenomenal coach, phenomenal person, and yeah, great, great man.
Great stories, Rich. Now, who would you consider one of your fiercest opponents?
My fiercest opponent would be definitely that I had, you know, that I went head to head with would be Eric Lindros.
Aha, uh-huh, okay.
Eric and I had an unbelievable rivalry. You know, as much as we hated each other. When I was playing Philly and he was playing me, I knew it was going to be, holy crap, here we go. We're going head to head. And, you know, I fought him a few times. He's a big man.
Yeah, he is.
And we had some great, great bouts. And, I have all the respect for him as a player, what he did, but you know what? That was, him and I had some great battles, and we absolutely hated each other. So he was one of the fiercest guys I've ever played against.
You ever go on YouTube and check out some of your bouts on there?
My son's drafted too. I'm not sure if you knew that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so he's drafted with, Garrett's drafted with the Washington Capitals. He's now signed.
Nice.
He signed there.
Outstanding.
So, he's a 19-year-old, and he'll probably have an opportunity. He'll probably be a good pro player at the NHL. And everything he does, he's better than me.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye out.
Yeah.
Have you been to Brooklyn?
I haven't been to Brooklyn. You know what? I've been trying to, I've talked about it a few times with my son, actually.
Yeah.
We were thinking about trying to get up there, and just kind of with his schedule and everything. I don't want to just go alone. I'd rather take him with me, right?
Right.
So I'm hoping that if this season, if he gets out of the playoffs early, I think he's going to get called up. He got called up last year to the Hershey.
Hershey, yeah. The Bears.
So if he goes this year, I'm going to get him to meet me in New York.
Nice. Yeah, I think he'll be shocked.
I'd love to get down to the Barclays Center. And just, you know, I don't know how much longer they're going to be there or not. We hear just stuff, you know, what I watch on Sports Center and what they talk about, where they are.
Well, there's no place else to go, Rich, right now, you know?
Yeah.
So they're kind of stuck.
Why wouldn't they go back to the Coliseum?
The Coliseum's been renovated, but they didn't put enough seats back in there for hockey. There's only about 12,000 seats.
Oh, okay.
Now, why they didn't make it big enough for the Islanders to return, that's politics, or that's something that no one knows, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's too bad. So, but I heard the Barclays Center is a beautiful building. I've heard that. So.
Yeah, but it's not for hockey. That's the thing.
That's the thing, right?
Yeah.
It's
unfortunate. Well, Rich, it's been great having you with us tonight. Some tremendous stories.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And anytime you guys want to reach out, I'm definitely always available. And, yeah, I got a lot of stories, so.
All right, yeah, we'll keep tabs on you, Rich.
All right, thanks very much.
And keep growing those sideburns.
I sure will. Yeah, I sure will. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rich. Take care. Rich Pilon, folks. That'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guests, Fergie Jenkins and Rich Pilon, my engineer, Brian Graves, and, of course, you folks for joining us. Stay tuned for hour number two on Sports Talk 1240. I'll see you next Sunday at 8 with former Ranger goalie Gilles Gratton. Till then, Bill Donahue, wishing you a good evening, folks.
In the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.